best way.
He offered them the Uzi machine pistol, but both Ryan and Jack elected to stick with their own weapons, the ones they knew best. Ryan had his 9mm Sig Sauer P226 blaster. It held 15 rounds and had a push-button mag release with a built-in baffle silencer. He had the trusty Panga, its blade 18 inches of honed steel, on his left hip. The slim flensing knife was snug in the small of his back. Jack had four leaf-bladed throwing knives, hilts taped for perfect balance. They were hidden so well about his person that even Ryan himself wasn't certain where he had them concealed. On his right hip, he still hefted the enormous satin-finished cannon, the .357 Magnum with a 6-inch barrel. They talked about what to wear. The evidence was that the slavers had come from somewhere seriously cold. JB pointed out that the dead man had lost three toes off one foot, with what could well have been gangrene from frostbite. Ryan had his familiar old coat with the fur collar and the white silk scarf, with its weighted ends tucked inside the collar. Jack was wearing jeans and a quilted jacket, western working boots, and a knitted cap in dark blue wool to hide his unmistakable hair.
"Wish I could do something about the patch over my eye. If we run into Zemyanin, I figure he'll probably recognize me."
Christina gave both of them a package wrapped in oiled cloth, which contained meat pies, savory and fresh, with some corn dodgers and strips of jerked beef. Each man had a canteen of water, drawn that morning from the Lawrence well. It was 8 minutes after eight. A bay mare stood docilely in the shafts of the buggy, its head down, munching its way through a heap of hay. Jack kissed his wife, hugged her, and climbed into the seat of the buckboard, picking up the reins and holding them loosely. Ryan shook hands with Doc and JB, embraced Mildred, and looked at Christy.
"Time to go, lover."
"Gaia, watch over you, and bring you and the boy home safe again."
JB grinned at Ryan as he offered him the old gunfighter's creed.
"Keep your back to the sun.
Stay sharp, and let's be careful out there."
Ryan clambered aboard the well-sprung rig, settling himself on the narrow seat, his coat across his lap. He nudged Jack.
"Let's go."
The mare moved forward. The wheels clumped and rolled over the dusty ground as they headed along the trail toward the redoubt. Ryan clung onto the rail at the side to save himself from being thrown off.
"I see why they call it a buckboard."
He glanced behind, seeing that everyone was waving. Christina stood a little to one side, one hand on her hip. Doc had run a few steps after them across the cropped grass.
"Shane!"
As Ryan waved to him, the old man called something. It was difficult to catch what it was above the noise of the buggy. It sounded like he was yelling Shane, but that made no sense to Ryan.
"You know you don't have to come all the way, Jack."
"I know."
They were drawing near to the rusting radar dish that lay ruined in the sand at the foot of the crook-topped mountain.
"The horse will take the rig back home?"
Jack nodded, reining in.
"Sure, nearest water. Just let it go."
Ryan jumped down, stretched his arms and shoulders. He picked up his coat and slung it over his arm.
"Yeah, it's going to be a warm climb."
Jack slapped the mare on the flank and stood watching as it trotted dutifully off, retracing its own tracks toward the distant farm. The trail was steep, open, and shadowless, baked by the rising sun. Jack led the way, light on his feet, Ryan panting and sweating behind him. There was a temptation to drink from their canteens, but they both resisted it, knowing that dehydration was the greatest killer in the bear desert, that once you drunk all your water, the going could get bleak. Finally, they reached the crest, where a huge explosion had ripped away the entire peak and flank of the hill. A dark hole gaped there. Ryan followed the teenager, standing head down, taking in several lungfuls of air. He wiped perspiration from his forehead, moving his eye patch, where salt irritated the empty socket.
"I can see for miles."
Jack ignored the view, peering into the pitchy blackness of the wrecked entrance.
"Look forward, not back."
If it had been a fiction vid, Ryan would have found a clue where Dean had been taken. Maybe his turquoise-hafted knife, a distinctive button ripped off his jacket, or a rumpled piece of paper carrying a vital, scribbled message. No such luck. There were the marks of feet in the driven sand that coated the tunnels and passageways of the redoubt. Jack knelt down to peer at them, shaking his head.
"Taz is nothing."
When they eventually reached the gateway chamber with its walls of silvery armor glass, Jack showed an odd reluctance to enter it.
Problem?
Nah. Yeah. I always hated jumps. Made me sick. Doc got in the head.
Ryan hesitated, standing by the heavy door, looking back past the small anteroom into the main control area.
Best you go home to Christine and the others, Jack.
No. Let's get jumping, Ryan.
He walked in and sat down, his woolen cap gripped in his hand, and rested his head on his knees, back against the translucent wall. He attempted a smile, which was like the rictus of terminal agony on a death's head. Ryan pressed the button marked LD, stepped inside the chamber, and pulled the door firmly shut behind him. The lock clicked. He sat opposite Jack, adopting a similar position. He placed his coat to one side in case he was sick or suffered from a nosebleed. It was oppressively warm and humid inside, and he could feel sweat trickling down into the small of his back. The metal discs that patterned the floor and ceiling of the Matrans unit began to glow, and a faint mist appeared in the air. Ryan could hear a distant humming sound, and he felt the familiar nausea swirling in his brain.
See you at the other end.
Ryan tried to reply, but his jaw was locked, and his head was filled with a churning, tepid mess of lead and molasses. Then, everything went black. Jack Lauren's last thought was a sweeping regret that bordered on panic. Then he slumped sideways into unconsciousness, and the dream began. He was sitting in a small boat amid the swampy bayous of what was once called Louisiana, engulfed by the scent of rotting vegetation. Spanish moss drooped from the mangrove branches like the intestines of long-dead lepers. There was very little freeboard, the thick muddy water coming within an inch or so of slopping over the sides. Jack kept very still. Water dripped all around him.
Jack!
Jack turned his head very slowly.
Jack, help me!
He knew the voice. Knew that Christina was in some deathly danger. There was a ripple of movement near the distant bank, and he glimpsed the serrated back of a huge alligator. To the right was another one, hooded eyes just above the ooze. The boat rocked from side to side, and filthy water came slopping in, lapping at his bare feet. Christina's cry was stifled by the oppressive branches that lowered around the teenager. Jack felt for his gun, but the holster was limp and empty. His knives had vanished.
In the name of Jesus, help me, Jack!
There was a fear stabbing pain in his stomach, and Jack wanted to lie down. But he couldn't see for the snow that was drifting all around him, masking the sharp-fanged rocks and the lean wolves that paced hungrily up and down.
Christina!
Tears rolled down Jack's narrow cheeks, mingling with the threads of vomit that dribbled from his open mouth. In the gateway chamber, Jack's skinny body began to go into convulsions. Ryan was running through a great forest. Tall pines blotted out any glimpse of the sky, standing so close together that he had to twist and turn to make his way along the ill-defined and overgrown path. His feet were bare, bleeding, painful. Somewhere behind him, he could clearly catch the sound of heavy artillery, the shells screaming high above his head, landing in the distance far in front of him. Ryan knew that he had friends all around him, the snow-headed boy and his limping wife, the woman with hair like flame and eyes like frozen emeralds, an old, old man who laughed at life. There was a black woman to his right. It was odd that he knew that, even though it was impossible to see anything through the surrounding trees. And a pale-faced short man in glasses. Ryan knew him.
JP.
The sound barely broke the mist that flooded the gateway chamber. He'd been sprinting along a narrow stream, kicking his way through the polished pebbles, and then dove full length onto a gravel beach, running the tiny stones, cold and wet, between his fingers.
Where's my boy?
Ahead of him, he could make out the silhouette of a trestle bridge, way above the river. Sekmen, wearing dark uniforms, lined the bluffs to the left and right, looking down at him. A boy stood on the bridge, his hands bound behind him. He was a small, sturdy figure, with a shock of dark curly hair. A hemp noose had been tightened around his neck. Beside him was an officer in a slouch hat, gripping a brass-hilted saber. He was grinning down at Ryan, who stood